friends, and welcome to Pod Return to the Waking Sands. We are a Final Fantasy XIV companion podcast where we explore the lore and story of Hydaelyn and beyond. My name is Jen, and I'm joined by my co-host and researcher.
I'm Levi.
Hi, Levi.
Today, we are continuing our Coils of Bahamut series. We will be finishing up the Binding Coil. But first, what happened last time, Jen?
No! Okay, well, last time we get word from Orange that there's some new exciting primal shit going on, and we need to go talk to a mystery person to figure out what that is. That mystery person is in Wineport, and it is none other than Alizée Levieux herself. And while we've been doing primal shit, she's been doing this shit. I'm trying to figure out a way into the caverns underneath Castrum Occidens because there's weird stuff going on in there. And she wants to know. She wants to get to the truth of the calamity, like full stop. So we do some things. We sneak through the Castrum. Not really. We just fly over a wall and figure out how to access the place. And we get in there and we do. We figure out a way in. And through Alizée's contacts, with the Maelstrom, we have like a secret entrance in and out forevermore. So that's cool. And that's that.
Cool.
Yeah. And then we did the first turn. So that's 237 yalms in, taking like one of these like massive incline elevators down to the research station that the Empire has built up. And then we find the first opening, which is a piece of Dalamud holding... keeping us out with an Allegan defense node. So we beat that, and then we find like a whole big fucking huge ass cavern in there that is, and all of the corrupted crystal is connected to one of Bahamut's wings, and we fight our first little boss in there, and then we just continue going deeper. So now we are going deeper.
Yeah. So we are on now to the Binding Coil, turn two. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you to our group of listeners who ran through this content with us synced. We were on fire, Jin. I expected us to bounce off the final turn, but we cleared that shit in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible.
Like, we were... Yeah, we blocked out a significant amount of time for this, just for the last fight alone, because we did this with our Savage Static.
Called
and
out.
And we like, you know, we're all, I would say, very good players, very experienced players. We were doing it as a group of blue mages, though, right? That's when we were doing it? Yeah. So maybe your mileage may vary, but yeah, we definitely bounced off of it a lot more than we did this time.
With us were Tepantau Jessel on Dark Knight, Farinae Piersenia as Scholar, Chi Miyu on Astrologian, Mervin Corvus on Summoner, Raven Ghostpaw on Reaper, Aki Maho as Red Mage, and then Jen was Bard and I played as Paladin. Woo. So great work, everyone. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway, on to turn two. So turn two is now 912 yalms deep. We are now deep in the Allegan tech down here. This is probably like a whole section of Dalamud that got embedded in the earth here. We are walking on the reddish Allegan structures with the blue circuitry-like lights and so on in this section.
Yeah.
If you look up, it's like pure blackness above you, but if you squint, you can kind of see little bits of distant corrupted crystal glowing off way, way, way in the distance. But we're in some massive dark cavern right now.
Yeah.
And the main lights here are from the Allegan tech itself.
It's very disorienting.
I feel like there's some implicit self-repair tech going on too, because this shit is pristine.
Yeah.
It is like level to a T. No tilt whatsoever, despite being a piece of a fucking moon that crash landed in the earth or whatever.
And everything still works.
Yeah. So it seems like they came back to life.
There's some regeneration going on. Exactly. Yeah, there's self-repair.
Yep. This turn is just a techno labyrinth. This isn't a maze in that you can get lost. It's more that you can pick which way you go. And as you descend through this labyrinth, doors will close behind you so you cannot backtrack. And the route you take will then affect the final boss of this turn.
Mm-hmm. Does that give you different gear options if you select a different boss at the end of the turn?
No, it's just the difficulty that you sign up for.
I see.
As we are descending, every single arena has some sort of Allegan node in it. These are things like monitoring nodes, sanitary nodes, quarantine nodes, disposal nodes. Essentially, they're like the worker robots that are also trying to fight us off when we're invading their supposed home turf here.
They're just doing their jobs,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Individually, these guys are not that tough. It's mostly setting your flavor of boss fight to come. Because at the very bottom, all of the different branching paths lead into one single boss fight at the bottom of this maze. It is against another Allegan defense system, the ADS.
Right.
So this guy has some mechanics.
We got hit. Some of his hits were pretty fat, and they also aren't very, some of them aren't telegraphed. They don't give you a lot of telegraph.
No.
They are, but you have like a split second.
Yeah, so
to
the AoEs this guy drops, you have like a hot quarter second to react to them before they resolve. So if you're not poised to like jam on your movement key, you will get clipped by this shit. There is no time to react.
Yeah.
But we had killed the quarantine node, which made us skip the party wiping mechanic that probably would have killed us if we had not killed the quarantine node. So,
Great. Go us.
In general, this guy drops Vuln stacks on you as the fight goes on. I had like 8 or so by the time we killed him. I had to pop.
Rats. To clarify, guys, he didn't fuck up any mechanics.
Oh my God.
Right?
I fucked it's up just some mechanics. I got clipped by some AoEs.
Totally natural.
But he will drop these things on you just every so often. And I had to pop my Invuln towards the end of the fight because I was taking so much damage, like the healers couldn't keep up with the auto attacks from this thing.
Yeah.
We cleared it like around 8 or so Vuln stacks for me, probably like a minute to 2 minutes into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been much worse if we had not killed the quarantine node, because if you do not kill the quarantine node, then the ADS will have a mechanic called Allegan Rot. This is a tricky mechanic. All characters need to spread out. Someone will be afflicted by the rot, which is a short duration debuff. When it expires, that character explodes and they will probably wipe the raid. So you have to pass on the rot to another character by touching them. This will cleanse you of the rot. You gain a debuff that makes you immune to the rot for the rest of the fight. And the new victim will get a fresh debuff with a fresh timer. So you're playing hot potato with this debuff during the fight, and hope you don't either spread it too quickly by like hitting too many characters with it at once, or run out of people who can receive the debuff before the fight's over.
So you've got to time that shit and make sure that you are spreading it at an interval that will keep that hot potato going.
Yes.
Until you defeat the boss.
Yes.
Wow. That's interesting. Also, I would assume that not killing the quarantine node means that the quarantine node is still quarantining and therefore there would be no rot. But we killed the quarantine node. It is no longer able to cleanse the rot. So that's just a little observation I made.
No, I agree that the heuristic of it is kind of weird. Maybe
like, It's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. Maybe that they released the rot on you deliberately, but because you killed the quarantine node, it then cannot trigger the release protocol.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree that it feels counterintuitive, but it's the way it works. So
it's the way it works.
Yep. All right. If you do kill the quarantine node, the boss will gain other abilities. These can include some combination of gravity field, which is a damage over time and slow ground marker. Fire Stream, which is a star-shaped AoE, which hits hard and inflicts a damage over time effect.
We got that.
Ballast, which is a damage and knockback ring AoE. And Chain Lightning, which is a blast that deals more damage the closer that you are clumped together. It'll spread between players, but it'll spread harder if you're clumped up.
Spread harder.
Once we clear the ADS, we then take another Allegan elevator down from the very base of this labyrinth, going deeper into the coil. So on now to turn 3.
How many alms down are we?
1,233.
So this is an entirely different environment than the one we just came from.
This is a fallen starship called the Ragnarok.
Oh.
Because if you check the, like when you queue up for the duty in the duty finder, then it will tell you a little blurb about the dungeon. Half the story of these things is in that little blurb. It's not in the actual instance. It's in the text that describes it.
Sure. Nobody reads that stuff, I don't think.
Excuse me, Jen.
No. Well, we do now because pod. but before, honestly, I didn't even... God, I I'll read the lore in like fucking leave quests. But I didn't read this, which is sad.
We are now inside a fallen starship called the Ragnarok. I'm guessing this was used to maybe like transport people from the surface to the moon, to like Dalamud or whatever, to like, carry supplies maybe or personnel. Incidentally, starships travel between stars, but...
So this is a moon ship.
Moon ship, exactly. Or rock space ship.
Yeah.
Either it's a mistranslation or no one cared. Whatever. Anyway, so this is a spaceship that was on the moon. And then when Dalamud fell, this came along with it. So maybe they like docked it there and left it. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah.
As a point of trivia, the Ragnarok is the name of the space / airship in Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay.
We're now inside this enormous spaceship that seems to be oriented on its end. It's like it's pointing nose up or nose down.
Yep.
And the interior is like a massive cylinder with broken chunks of floor jutting out from the walls. This is a swank ass fucking ship. The interior is mostly gold.
Yes.
I like this aesthetic a lot. You can see like the dark metal kind of structural bits protruding from the broken areas.
Yeah.
It's like the rebar of this
gold
plating stuff.
So like the entire like center of this was like ripped out.
Yeah.
So there's just these thin platforms around the outer shell of the ship that are just clinging to life. And then on some of these platforms, I mean, you're going from top to bottom. And this is a bit of a puzzle. You need to be jumping from the right platform to the right platform.
Well, before then, if you look down, you can see that there are crackling energy fields that bisect the ship. And as we descend, we must deactivate these fields. Otherwise, I'm assuming
we'll
you'd get roasted.
Yeah.
Like you can't actually do it, I don't think. You can't progress either until you turn off the fields.
And that would be, so you're going to be descending, platform one, platform two, platform three. Or does it go from 10? It goes from high to low or low to high? I don't remember.
You go down. We're always going deeper.
No. I mean, like the platforms each have their own name. I think we start at 10.
Harder hitting.
Go down to the whatever.
Reporting than I signed up for, Jen.
Fine. It really doesn't matter. But yeah, well, we're going from top to bottom. Whatever the floors are numbered, doesn't matter, but we're going from top to bottom. And it seems like we're going down forever. Some of these falls are like dozens of yams.
The way that you navigate is that there are these jump pads on the ground, and they will have between, I think, one and three different like little lights around the outside.
So there's like, there are radially oriented buttons around this platform. If you stand on one, it will illuminate in that direction, and that's where it will throw you. And some of them have more than one option. So this is where you can kind of get stuck going back and forth and back and forth forever. If you stand on the wrong circle and go into a wrong direction, whatever. So you have options.
Also, if a party member steps on the wrong button, you can split the party send half them rocketing off who knows where.
It was by accident. I was just like walking up. I was just walking onto the platform itself, and that activated one of the things, and it just went whoop. Two people followed me.
This is not that hard to navigate. If you see a terminal, you need to go to the terminal first and boop it to turn off the energy field. Failing that, always go towards the next blue ring.
Yeah.
If you're jumping through a blue ring, you're on the right track.
So yeah, the platforms may or may not be next to a very large, looks like a glowing blue stargate, essentially, that's floating in midair. So if you have the option, yes, choose the direction that will shoot you through this fucking thing You'll be fine.
This is kind of fun the first time, but you either have to designate one person as the navigator or you risk chaos if some errant Lala decides to change the party's direction and sends you off in some other direction, splitting the party and maybe causing a wipe. Like your tanks end up on the wrong side of the map.
Yes. And I think that's probably the biggest danger of this whole setup.
But
that's probably what it's trying to do.
As a game design question, like why? Is this fun for seven people to play follow the leader? Is it fun for one person to point towards a ring?
No, it's not. It's also not fun to get separated. It doesn't make it interesting. I started actually sweating. My anxiety was getting really bad because like y'all were like, you know, moving on and moving on and moving on. And then the three of us were like, how do we get out of this situation that we're in? Desperately trying to find the way forward to meet up with the rest of the party and then encountering our own bullshit along the way. And maybe we were unequipped to get like, I can see how this could trap you forever until you leave duty.
Well, what I'm saying though is that this is not really a good fit for an MMO dungeon. By default, seven people are not involved in the mechanic. No matter how good or bad it is, only one person can actually participate in the mechanic. The others just follow them around.
And maybe there might be, we had to fight, what, four moms?
Groups?
Right.
Yes.
Four groups. We jumped around a lot. And there were only, I think, four encounters that we dealt with.
Yeah, just a bunch of trash enemies. The only ones that matter are the dark matter golems.
Yeah.
They have a cleave and a raid wide that hurts a little bit, but they are not hard. It's just a dungeon full of trash enemies and then a jumping puzzle. This would be like a C-grade puzzle at best in a single-player game. In multiplayer, very odd design choice.
Yeah. I mean, it looks cool. It looks very impressive.
It looks cool.
And it certainly informs you as a player that you're going deeper underground.
It does inform you that you're going deeper.
Yep.
We are going down.
We are going down.
So after we jump around a lot and we boop the terminals, we are now on to turn 4. We have now descended to 1,524 yalms beneath the surface.
So between the last turn and this one, it's only about 300 yalms. It seemed like way more than that. 1,000 feet? Was that like 100 stories?
What?
I'm trying to like spatially organize this. It just seems like the depth that we fell through turn 3 is so much more than 300 yalms.
I think there is some implied travel between different dungeons. I don't think that we're experiencing every single yalm that we descend.
So we might be like going up in elevation somehow and traversing the turns. Is that what you're saying?
What? No.
I don't know. I'm trying to
we go
spatially
down.
Spatially organize this in my head, and I don't need to do that. I need to stop. My only point was that through turn 3, it seemed like we traversed far more than 300 yalms. That's all I'm saying.
I see. I gotcha. You could probably honestly figure that out if you were so inclined.
Someone do the math.
So I think what you're saying is that it feels like we have gone deeper during turn 3 than, 1,000 yalms? No, 300 yalms.
Yes, because turn 3 is 1,233, but turn 4 is 15-something.
Correct. Those are the numbers.
Yeah. So it just seems like we went farther.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if honestly the height that we descend in turn 3 is around that amount.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. I don't do that in real life.
Assuming that a yalm is about a yard, 1,000 feet is a good
distance. It's a decent amount of, it's possible.
It doesn't feel off to me.
Okay.
Obviously, between turns 2 and 3, we went down a good distance off camera. No question.
Right.
But during turn 3, I can see us going down in the area of 300 yalms and not blink at it.
Okay, fair enough.
Either way, whatever the math checks out as, we are now on the drive cylinder of the Ragnarok, and we are riding it down to reach the main bridge. So this is a big metal platform in an elegant elevator shaft. We press a button and the platform begins to descend and little metal boxes drop down onto the platform. They unfurl into spider-like robots. This whole turn is one big elevator fight.
Yes. And it's going to be group after group after group after group of little clockwork things. We have like little mech guys, we've got clockwork knights, are they all like clockwork something?
I think that the dreadnoughts are not quote clockwork whatever.
And And right, so we have dreadnoughts, and
so the dreadnoughts are big, bulky, walking tank things.
They're pog slammers.
Yes, they are walking pog slammers.
Yes,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That are covered in cogs.
So, but are these Allegan or are these,
yes,
like,
they're Allegan?
Oh, okay.
These also will appear in later content, Alexander. Later Allegan content.
Right?
No.
No.
Not Allegan.
I know, but they look like. See, that's the thing, is that they didn't immediately seem Allegan to me because they seem kind of rudimentary. You know, because these are like, these are very simple mechanisms.
I can see that.
So I thought that there was, that these guys were introduced by the Empire. Like this is like Garlean tech.
No, these are definitely Allegan, and there is further evidence for that in the future.
Sure. I mean, that totally makes sense. But yeah, they just look a little rougher than the Allegan tech that we're familiar with.
Also, I feel like the Empire hasn't gone like more than 10 yelms inside this place from the entrance because...
Yeah, they built out like 3 staircases and then...
called it.
They're good.
Well, we got this ADS thing here. Can't get past that.
I mean, to be fair, we don't know how long they've been like dicking around in there, but just that first level, there is so much to do. So, you know, it's fine.
So anyway, one long kind of endurance and timing fight. These guys will drop down on a timer, I believe. So you don't have... You can't like clear a wave and then start the next one. You have to keep on busting.
Mm-hmm. Or you will get overwhelmed.
Yes.
That's the jam. Yeah.
So we brute force this with our synced party, but there are mechanics here, which I think were more relevant back in the early days of A Realm Reborn. Again, huge balance changes and so on since then. So it's, you really cannot go back to those times, even if you do synced min-eye level.
Such is life.
Yes. But the mechanics here to watch out for are that the Clockwork Knights will reflect magic damage back at casters. So leave those guys to the physical DPS.
Yeah, literal clockwork. I'm rubber, you're glue.
Yep. And then the Dreadnoughts, they will try to consume the Clockwork bugs. If they do so, they'll kill the bugs, but they will gain a damage up buff. So apparently, according to the wiki, the strat back in the day was that you would have the Dreadnoughts eat the bugs because there wasn't time to DPS all the bugs before the next wave came out. So you'd want the Dreadnought to, quote, kill the bugs, and then you just have to mid and heal through the damage buff to kill the Dreadnought.
Sure. Yeah, I put down here, like, Clockwork Mechanisms and Imperial Vanguards because that's what they fucking look like to me. They look like the mechs, you know? But they're not.
Heavy disagree there.
That's fine. That's like the little clockwork things. I can, whatever. There's flexibility there. Maybe they're like, you know, proto whatever Allegan stuff. But yeah, they just looked so industrial. We don't have fancy lights and smooth floaty, you know,
they
orbs
come from
or
the Allegan's brutalist face.
That's cute. I like that. That's canon now.
There we go. The final wave is the trickiest one. And in that wave, you will get another Dreadnought, bugs, a Clockwork Knight, and a Clockwork Soldier. Back in the day, though, I understand that you had to have some careful separation where you'd have the main tank pull the Dreadnought away, and then you would burn down the adds as usual. Make sure that the second Dreadnought does not eat any little bugs because there's no future waves coming and the damage buff would be too much.
Mm.
So just... The standard, like, separation, mitigation, divide and conquer type stuff.
It was kind of fun. Just, you know, we got 7 or 8, 10, I don't know, little dudes coming out. And be like, no, your journey stops here. And then the next wave, same thing. Your journey stops here. They really didn't want us to go any further.
So,
like,
Jen,
good job, guys.
Did you count how many yalms we descended on the elevator?
No, but I want to say it's about 400.
Yes. Did you guess that based on the speed of the elevator?
I super did not. No, I did not notice how fast we were going.
Well, we are now at 1,910 yalms below the surface.
It's a lot of yalms, guys.
So we have elevated
down. We're
at
the Titanic.
Shy of 400 yalms. At the very bottom, this is the final turn of Binding Coil. We have reached the central core of the Ragnarok. The elevator leaves the shaft and now just like flies down because it's also like a flying elevator, apparently.
Of course it is.
And it just descends in empty space and stops next to this gargantuan stone claw.
Well, it's gargantuan. you cannot really grok what the fuck it is right away because it is so big. But you edge yourself to the to the edge of the platform, the elevator. And looking down, you can take in the whole scene. And this was funny. Like, the first time we did this, I think unsynced, I think some people maybe hadn't, like, seen this or, like, noticed it the first time. And they're like, that looks like a big hand. Like, oh, shit, it's a big hand. Yeah, it's the right claw, the right hand of Bahamut. So you're like, they've got this giant palm and the three taloned claws, or four, I think. It is enormous. That's the arena.
Yes. So in this cavern, this is like the ship has burst open, maybe as this claw entered it. And we see scattered, ruptured, elegant tech everywhere. In the distance, we see veins of corrupted crystals. The hand itself, the claw of Bahamut, is tangled in elegant tech. You can still see the stuff like around his wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So we hop off the flying elevator onto one of his talons and descend to the palm. As we descend, Alice, who we've not seen for like three turns, says, thank you, Warrior of Light. You've been a great bro. Thanks for all the help so far.
No problem.
She also wonders, how is this hand corporeal when the primal is supposed to be dead?
Exactly. Why are there so many existing corporeal pieces of Bahamut?
And also, how did the land change so much if Bahamut's Aether did not return to the land?
Exactly. Just so as we go deeper, so too does the mystery.
Nice. Answers, though, will only be found by pressing on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we descend onto the palm. We now see a pair of wyverns flit through space, and from above, a dragon descends. This dragon has a spinning metal ring around its neck.
Mm-hmm.
This is Twintania, one of Bahamut's brood, a dragon enslaved by the Allegans to fight their battles for them.
But we don't learn this until after the fight. Before, we just think, oh, it has some kind of collar. We don't know why or how or whatever. But we learn this after the fight.
We'll learn it in 0.5 seconds if we're doing this unsynced.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, my God. The amount of grief that this fight gave us. I had fear, like deep fear.
This was like back in the day when we were baby players, we queued for Coil through Duty Finder like your standard ignorant newbies do.
Yeah, this will be fun.
And first four turns, no problem, because that shit's pretty easy if you have decent gear.
The mechanics are fine. You can deal with it. It's not unique.
Turn five, though. Forget again, this has mechanics that are on par with like present day extremes and maybe savage in some cases.
Yes, these are not sight readable. They're completely opaque mechanics. So, you know, to the wiki.
to the YouTubes. We go.
Yeah.
So, this fight is very difficult and it's a lot more janky than current mechanics are. Like, there's some stuff that just is hard to resolve because the design of the mechanic is not very easily readable and like resolvable. The main thing that has traumatized me are the dive bombs, personally.
Yes, yes, yes.
You must work with your group to complete this. You cannot YOLO the fight synced. You will mess up a mechanic and you will wipe the party. It's that tier of content. Not like, you know, if you fuck up, you die, you get a res, you move on.
No, like you need to get your ass back in there. Otherwise, people will suffer for it. But yeah, this is typical like ARR. We're making shit up because we think it's cool, and you know, never mind the trauma that we will inflict upon players. So we definitely had that.
A couple notes on the mechanics from the start. First, you want light parties for this fight, as there is a four-player stack mechanic in the first segment. So the main tank will never ever stack with other players because you're going to drop a cleave on the party and kill half of them. So you will have two groups of three, two DPS, one healer, and then the off tank will be the floating member bouncing between different light parties as needed to make them a group of four. Second, the other mechanic to bear in mind are the neurolinks. These are small dark circles on the ground that have like a blue staticky energy field around them.
Mm-hmm.
These are a big tactical component in the fight. While inside the neurolink, your damage taken and damage dealt is greatly diminished. So you will stand inside these to avoid certain mechanics, but otherwise you will not want to be inside them because you will do shit for damage and you will bring the party down.
Mm-hmm.
These will persist once they appear for the entire fight. On to the fight itself. First off, Twintania starts with her dragon friends. These are the Scourges of Maricidia.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The main tank wants to grab Twintania, and the off tank will grab the adds, kill the adds as usual. They will drop fire puddles on the ground, so you want to kill them and then move on. After they're down, then you want to split into your light parties and then make sure you're separate for the upcoming mechanics. During this phase, Twintania will drop two Neuralink markers directly below her. So the main tank needs to reposition her after the first one goes down to a spot slightly offset from the first link. Otherwise, you're going to wipe a mechanic in like two phases.
Great.
So do that. Yeah, there's no telegraph. You just like see them on the ground. It's like, oh, hey, you laid an
egg,
Twintania.
Right,
good job.
Do we stand in these or do we not stand in these? We don't know.
The answer is maybe.
Maybe.
Then there are the fireballs. This is the four-player stack mechanic. When you see the red triangle over your head, clump up with your light party and then soak the mechanic. Done. If you don't soak correctly, people will die.
Yep.
The other mechanic this phase is conflagration. This is a blue circle that will appear over a player's head. This player will want to stand inside the Neuralink because the conflagration does tons of damage and right. This will help them die less quickly. The conflagration, once triggered, will drop a big area of like
just active
fire
flame.
Energy yeah. around them. It will paralyze that player. If anyone else goes inside the conflagration, they too will be caught up in it, being burned and paralyzed.
Great.
Don't drop it on your party. Don't walk in there. You can target this, though. This thing is like a targetable entity.
It's like a dirty bubble from yeah. the brief Lux fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice pull.
Thank you.
The notable other targetable paralyzed mechanic in the game.
Absolutely.
So you want to DPS the conflagration once it appears. Done. However, the fireball mechanic also appears during conflagrations. There is a life hack, though, because if you have the fireball marker and you walk inside the conflagration, you will be paralyzed, sure, but this nullifies the fireball marker.
Ha.
So you can skip that mechanic.
You can't set me on fire if I'm already on fire, bitch.
Precisely. So once that's done, we get Twintania down to 55%. Now we begin the dive bomb phase.
Fuck this phase.
Fuck this phase.
God.
She will fly out of the arena and target a random player with a green marker. This is the dive bomb target. She will swoop in on this person and knock anyone in her path a great distance and deal damage. If you contact the arena wall, you will die in one hit, no exceptions. So you're likely to get killed just from the knockback alone.
Yep.
She'll do this three times. The most dependable resolution I've seen for this is to get into one little spot between the north and west claws of Bahamut. Because like at the little membrane between those talons, there is a big Z-axis change.
It's like where your knuckles meet your palm. There's a dip in the elevation there.
Yes.
So that's where you need to like go and hide to trigger. That's where you will bait the dive bomb marker. And then as soon as that shit pops up, the entire group will just move uphill a bit. So she'll dive bomb. That change in elevation is just enough so that, this is a total cheese. But
this mechanic's a cheese. So.
Yes. It's just she'll dive bomb where you guys just were. And y'all are standing literally 10 feet away on a little hill. And then you'll go back and do the same thing and just back and forth and back and forth.
Apparently I'm Jin this episode because she will swoop below you as you evade her vertically. You trick her into flying below you. Because Jin always likes to soften my more objective, harsh perspective. But now Jin's like, this is jank ass, yo. And I'm like, Jin.
This is commenting on our own behavior. And it's so much easier to throw yourself under the bus than it is to throw somebody else.
I see.
So, yeah, like this is, and straight up, it's not like we're doing the mechanic, quote unquote, right. But we're doing it in a way that will ensure our survival, and it is a cheese.
I don't know. It's still there after 10 years, so I think it's right enough.
Yeah. We couldn't figure out how to deal with it otherwise, really. It was just like, well, the one person who got the marker, well, they're fucked. Hopefully nobody is standing around them.
There's another way that involves like a lot of sprinting back and forth. Yeah. And it's a huge thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, and it was just like, in the timing of it is really touchy. If you don't get it just right, you'll die.
This timing sucks. Like, there is no margin for error, period. If you're off by like half a second, you will probably bait her wrong and you'll get people killed.
If you do this technique, which is highly recommended just for your sanity, be in voice chat with the other people in your party. So you can say like, okay,
frankly, stand, be in voice chat for this
back,
period.
Move back. Yes. Yes. So recommend.
Anyway, so we do the dive bombs. We survive three of them. Now it's ads phase. We get more snakes, more like mini Caduceuses coming out. We fight them. Not a big deal. The problem being, though, is that because this is the Realm Reborn, all mechanics are on timers. It's not like if you kill snakes, then dive bombs.
Nope.
So if you're not fast enough or if people have died to dive bombs, then she will start dive bombing you again while you're fighting the snakes. Yes. So that makes it very hard to multitask and to do that split second dodging of the dive bombs while you're fighting snakes. After three more dive bombs, there are two more snakes, and then that's it for the phase. But because we're on a timer here, if you kill the snakes early, you're going to be standing around for a long time doing
wondering
shit
what the
all.
Fuck. Is that when we were standing in the Neuralinks going like, do-do-do-do-do?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice for getting your cooldowns back and getting your like res sickness off or whatever.
Sure.
But also you're doing literally nothing for like 30 seconds.
A long
seconds.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
So anyway, we kill the second round of ads and then we will stand inside those Neuralinks, which the main tank has definitely placed correctly before then, way
definitely.
Back at the fight's start. Otherwise, you're going to wipe.
Absolutely. Isn't that fun?
Ugh. The party stands in one Neuralink. The main tank stands in the other. After the designated time has passed, Twintania reappears and does a mega energy blast, a huge burst of bright white light. You need the damage down from the Neuralinks to survive this. She will then immediately do like a cleave on the main tank after that. So that's why you want to separate.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to get the whole party cleaved on.
Yep.
Once that happens, then get out of them links and go back to the fight. We are now in the penultimate phase. The main killer here are the Twisters.
Ugh,
this
forgot.
Mechanic has reappeared in the most recent deep dungeon. It kills people as much then as it did back in the day.
Holy shit, yeah.
The way it works is that when you see the Twister cast bar, you want to start moving. And you want to never stop moving until after the cast bar resolves. You want to spread, pretend like you all have like a one-shot spread marker on you. Mm-hmm. Do not be by other players. Do not stop moving until after the cast bar fires. Because when the cast bar finishes, she will drop a little green ball of wind where you were snapshotted at the cast completion. Someone described it as being like a mine, which is a pretty good descriptor as to how it works. Because if anyone is standing on the mine, yourself or other players, it will go off immediately. There's no like safety window. If you're on it, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
It will detonate into a small circle of wind. Everyone in there dies, full stop, no exceptions.
Yep.
So
again, opaque as fuck. I mean, there are mechanics out there that are like, okay, you either don't move while it resolves or you keep moving while it resolves.
Correct.
But in that case, we've gotten to the point where they can like animate this so that we know what to expect. And this is not that.
No, it's if you don't know how that it works, then you'll just die you're
and be like, what the fuck killed us?
Yeah, you're doing the rotation and you're fine doing doopy doop doop, then you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's very important though that when you are doing the spread and run, you do not run on other players or chase other players because you might trigger someone else's wind ball or
and
vice versa.
You'll just run right into your neighbor's shit. Like,
yes.
Don't run after people.
No.
And sometimes it's hard. The arena is very large. But even when we were doing it, you know, we're all like running around frantic. And like eventually somebody's path would like get close to yours and you'd be like, bro, And it's just everybody is so panicked. It's kind of comedy, but.
She will cast this multiple times during the phase. So you have to watch for that Twister cast bar while you're doing other shit.
It's funny. But like we did this on Great King Mogglemog. It's just absolutely frantic running around because what the fuck else are you going to do?
So I understand that when this fight was originally released, the server latency was so bad that it was actually nearly impossible to resolve the Twister mechanic because the server didn't recognize you being far enough away from the Twister given the latency issues.
Oh no, so it's Fall Guys beta. Like, we fixed it, you guys. Like, no, you fucking did it.
Until they updated the servers, I understand this fight could not be cleared. This is my hearsay.
Oh my god. I think I can believe it. I can believe it. All, maybe for some folks.
This is all hearsay again from like age-old forum posts and so on. But also in the way that sometimes devs do, they wouldn't admit to it being like a hardware issue. So like
skill it was, issue.
Exactly.
If anyway, you were there, email us. Tell us your story. We're doing Pod Return the Moth.
Besides the Twisters, in this phase, there is another new mechanic, which are the Dread Knights. These are the winged crow beaked construct guys. One will spawn in the middle of the arena and target a player. That player will be stunned. It will start walking towards the player. If they contact, that player will die.
Mm-hmm. Kill a dude.
Kill a dude. Done. That's it.
Yep.
We're on now to the final phase. Twintania drops her final neural link as well. There are now two new mechanics. The first one is successive fire puddles that will be blasted at a player, so you have to keep running ahead of them as they're being blasted in your direction. Don't bring them towards other players, please.
Please.
The second one is the orbs. These are dark orbs that will fly towards a player. You must stand inside a neural link to soak these, otherwise you will be one-shot. We didn't do this ourselves, but I understand there is a cheese strat for this where the off-tank can stand inside Twintania's hitbox on a neural link, and the orbs will detonate on the off tank as soon as they appear. So that tank can forego their DPS and just soak the orbs
nice. And
not make other players have to run away from them. We did not do this ourselves.
Did we skip it?
No, we did not. We had several people die to those orbs.
Oh shit. Again, panic.
So in our clear, we died once to Twisters, I think. And then The next poll, we had some casualties to Twisters, but we got through that phase okay. We went into the final phase, quote, blind, and just muddled through.
Yeah.
We had
like maybe four people up or five.
No, we had a healer LB3 pull us out of the fire.
That's right.
Because we were almost wiped, but we hit the LB3 point. Clutch ass healer LB3, got the whole party back. One die because they were in the death wall.
I know. So you res in the death wall and die again.
Yeah. But still, seven people back on their feet. We were able to brute force our way through that last bit of health on Twintania, despite not having practiced the mechanics.
So good.
I think that the fireball chasing, that's easy. Just run away.
Yeah.
But the energy ball, the dark orb mechanic, tougher for sure.
Correct. You don't really know what to do with that.
I mean, that one's intuitive. Actually, I figured that out myself on the fly because
to stand in the Neuralink to soak it?
Yeah, because I mean, it's like a huge chunk of damage and then you have this tool that gives you mitigation. I think that one's pretty honestly readable.
That one you can parse.
Yeah.
That I agree. It's not completely opaque. You can be like, you know what? What if I put this and this together? The first time though, because it's immediately preceded by the mirror knight or whatever that's tethered to you, and that's you target the thing, remove the thing, but the orb you can't really target it. But yeah. It's definitely like the stuff is there for you to see.
Yes. No, I think that the main mechanics here that suck are
Twisters. Dive bomb.
Dive bombs, just because of how little window there is to avoid them.
And can you even see where she's coming from?
You can learn the patterns through repetition, for sure.
You can.
The Neuralink, though, like the placement, that's going to gotcha you for sure until you figure out how to place them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will not see the necessity of them until like three phases after they appear.
I know. That's and so diabolical.
The Twisters, of course, Kaspar, you dead. The first time, there's no way you can sight read that.
Yeah, no.
I think, though, that beyond those mechanics, everything else in this fight is honestly discernible. It's not like, okay, so someone across the arena from you died and somehow their damage overflows to you and you die too. Raid wipe, start over.
Right.
Nothing like that in this fight. By some Savage standards, it's pretty parsable. It's just that the mechanics are not
up to
the current level of cleanliness, so they just kind of feel jankier in terms of how you need to resolve them.
Yeah. The visual language here isn't consistent with what they've been doing recently in the later expansions. Yep. That's all.
We'll be right back.
once Twintania dies, she disperses into Dark Aether. After defeating the dragon, we see a transporter at the end of a projecting block of elegant tech. Stepping into it, we are transported to a spacious rectangular room of pristine, elegant technology. There is a big bank of computer-looking shapes that emerge from a terminal at the far end of the room.
This is a long room, and it is enclosed. I think it's like hexagonal in shape, roughly. You know, maybe like 60, 70 feet across, tall. But you're walking through it on a platform, kind of going through the, like, longitudinally the center of it towards a group of, it's almost like, I don't know, if you had like a choir, they would be standing on these platforms. So these tiered hexagonal, you know, elegant shit, tiered hexagonal platforms in front of you and a small terminal. And everything is red, is what I noticed. It's not something special that I noticed. It's just red, okay? It's red. So Alizé attunes to this terminal. That's the word I'm using, but she just connects with it.
She wonders if it is used to regulate the flow of ether. The whole room also lights up. The terminal lights up in blue lights as she interacts with it. This triggers a cascading activation from the actual terminal across the entire room, bathing the whole area in the elegant blue glow of
Correct.
Light.
You go from red to blue. So at this point, Alizé is speculating on the nature of the collar around Twintania's neck. She thinks that it's most likely some kind of control device that the Elegans invented, which is an incredible piece of tech. And for sure, this is probably why the Garleans wanted to get down here to explore that. And they would have appropriated this technology, of course. Like any people or any nation or whatever that appropriated this technology would be a fucking game changer.
She says that the Ishgardians would want this too.
Right.
Because the Imperials suffered greatly at the hands of dragons in the Battle of Silver Tear Skies, this would be a way to counter a foe that has greatly wounded the Imperials beforehand.
Exactly.
So those are two high contenders for this technology. But how, wonders Alizé, did such an advanced civilization fall?
Yeah. So the platforms in front of us start to like recede back into the ground. And then behind us, these larger panels start to grow. So what it is doing, it's kind of like opening up the half of the space that was in front of us and closing off the half that was behind us, revealing an entirely new chamber. But now in front of us is a massive, massive chamber, and it's Bahamut's head, like upper chest and head floating in this space, being actively lasered upon. Assuming and in its chest cavity there is a glowing, pulsating crystal, almost like it were its heart, and it looks like it is actively being regenerated.
There are like techno prongs coming out of the wall that are beaming these energy beams into the head.
Yeah, this is some like sci-fi shit. If you see it, you know, it's like Luke Skywalker in like Empire Strikes Back, and he's in that thing that is putting his hand back together, and he's just like in a tube of fluid. And this is Bahamut's tube of fluid, where these Elegan mechanisms are recreating it bit by bit by bit. So for the last 5 years, these machines have been kind of putting them back together.
Given what we learn in Second Coil, that may need to be revisited as to the exact function. So put a pin in that for now.
Right. So this is like, again, I don't remember really anything about the story. So this is all I can do is hypothesize about what I'm looking at.
That could be easily what's going on here for sure. Like it's either holding or regenerating or something.
Something.
In seeing Bahamut's head right now in this state, he's not like alive because it's a disembodied head and calcified body parts throughout the coil so far, but also definitely not dead too.
Right.
One, because his head looks very lifelike.
Mm-hmm.
And two, being a primal, he should be dispersed if he were dead. So,
and also this is how he was able to like quote unquote cry out and make the noise and make the land tremble with his roar.
Yes.
And that's why we're here.
If Bahamut has awakened again, did Louis Soir give his life in vain, wonders Alizé?
Mm-hmm.
we don't have enough information right now, so let's retreat, regroup, and figure out what's going on here before we get into trouble with maybe this dragon head might come to life or something.
Yeah.
This was kind of weird to me because if you were to take the same scenario for like a tabletop party, they would tear the fucking room apart before giving a single inch back to backtracking.
Absolutely.
This is only a thing you can do in narrated stories because no group of
like, we've
players...
made it this far, let's bail.
Yeah, no. Again, that maybe I've been doing too many tabletop RPGs, but that felt so weird that you got your destination and like you see this thing here and you're like, okay, cool, it's scary, see you later. And that's that. I understand the importance of this retreat in the story and also having three sets of raids in the series, but also maybe employ some academic curiosity, Alize.
I mean, she wants to, but at the same time, she's like, if something happens, we will just die down here. So, I mean, for me, as a very risk-averse person, I get that.
I don't know. We just fucking survived Twintania. We can handle our shit a little bit.
Yeah, well,
it's
this
fine.
Is different. I mean, the scope of what we're seeing is so insane. It's very terrifying. This is an impressive fucking view. But you know, two of us. You know, yes, we are the Warrior of
Light.
Two
of us and seven adventurers.
Seven of our friends. But they're not with us right now, so it is just the two of us. And Alize is in no condition to, you know, battle mage it up.
No, it's more that, again, like in any sort of player-driven RPG, this would never, ever happen. If you were some like railroady ass GM, it's like, okay, so we're going to see that Bahamut head down here, and then you're going to be so scared you want to retreat and go back, and then I can do the second coil adventure next time. Hell fucking no. They're going to be climbing the goddamn walls trying to rip these things off the
walls. We would be looking for a terminal that we can log into to find, you know, logbooks, data, whatever. I mean, surely there was something like that in here.
So we're going to retreat with Alize, but then she notices someone. There is a figure standing on a platform in front of the head, the old man we saw in the earlier cutscene back in turn one.
Mm-hmm.
Alize marks him as Louis Sois, that signature back of the head,
right,
receding hairline.
His shirt and the hairstyle. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
No, seriously though, she sees him. She knows her grandfather.
Yeah.
She is granddaddy's girl.
Yeah. She calls out to him.
Is it truly you? She yells.
He turns to look at her, and it is clearly Louis Sois. But there's so much noise in this chamber. You can see his mouth move. He is talking to her. He's saying something. We can't hear any of it. It is not, there's no caption. There's nothing. We're not meant to hear what he says here. And he slowly turns around and starts walking towards Bahamut's head. He's already like a football field in front of us at this point. He's so far into the chamber. And he gives her a little smile and starts to walk further down. And this is where, props to Alize for making this hard decision. This is when she's like, we can't do anything more here.
Well, first, there is someone with him. There is a figure in Magitek armor who is with Louis Sois.
I miss that entirely. There is another person. Holy shit.
Right?
Yeah, there's someone like 20 feet in front of him.
Yep.
In armor.
Magitek armor.
Yeah.
Yes.
I missed that completely. Nobody mentioned it, did they?
No,
you just had to notice it.
This is for the player. It's an Easter egg for the next coil.
Yeah. Holy fuck. Woo. I loved this whole moment. I don't know if I ever saw this when we did this the first time because we did it unsynced. We just blasted through and it was just like, go, go, go. This was the coolest shit. I loved this cutscene. It was so insane.
No, this is some of the best content in A Realm Reborn, like hands down.
Whoa, gives me chills.
Yeah.
It makes you feel so small and the mystery is so big at this point. What the fuck is Louis Sois doing down here?
So he vanishes, as does the mystery figure, if they were even there to begin with.
Right.
And Alize is now kind of dumbstruck, and it's time to go. So we leave, we go back to the surface. We apparently end up taking a different course, though, than the way we got down here, because we arrive in northern Thanalan. Alize wonders, how do we get here?
Right.
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
It's like it's a big cavern. It is conceivable well, that we
more
went that
importantly
far.
Though, grandfather's alive. That's the important part.
He's alive, but why wasn't he like running back? Why wasn't he trying hard to get out of there? What is this? So we have now more questions.
And we return to the Waking Sands to ponder. That is it for today, Jin.
Also, the little patch of corrupted crystal that we exit through is called Dalamud's Talons.
Cool.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts, Jin?
I can't. I mean, there are speculations that I can make.
Like this whole thing, I think we'll probably have like a very long kind of retrospective once we're done.
Absolutely.
But it's hard to talk about things until we have the story beats unfold.
Right. I think we just need to let it lie.
I just
got to
say, though, that in terms of like everything, the mechanics, the visuals, the story, the writing, this is the cream of the crop from A Realm Reborn, even through First Coil alone, through Binding Coil.
Yeah. It makes you feel feelings. You really feel like you do not have solid footing anymore. And as the Warrior of Light, that is, you've been given nothing but like answers and power. And at this point, you feel like you have neither of those things.
Yeah. Good stuff. So next time, we are starting on the second coil of Bahamut. See you then.
And that will do it for today's episode. Thank you guys again so much for listening and being good people in a good community. We love it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can at podreturnffxiv@gmail.com, or check the show notes for our Discord. Get in there, talk to these people, join us for group runs, share screenshots, glams, all of that good stuff. It's a really wonderful group of people. And also, you can go to patreon.com/podreturnffxiv. If you want to throw us a tip and gain access to our little accessory show, Surface Slap. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a good day or night, and we will see you next time.